Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Melissa Ann. Melissa is an Army veteran, a military spouse, and tragically, a Gold Star wife. She is also the author of the book, Darkness Within, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But first, I want to welcome you, Melissa, to the show. I appreciate you for taking the time to come and join me.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I know we shared in our little intro that we both kind of published our books right around the same time last year. So I thought that was really great that we got to semi-officially meet. So
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that there are more people out there who are sharing their stories and writing books about their stories, or even just sharing it in one way or another, whether it's on a podcast or some videos or, you know, whatever it is, whatever the medium is, doesn't matter necessarily, but people who are getting out there and sharing their stories. I think it's important because we all have a story to share. And when we share these stories, we don't even know the impact that it's going to have on other people. The level of reach that it can have and how much it could actually change and impact some other people's lives could be tremendous. So I'm really glad that you have shared your story, and I'd like to get into that a little bit, but first, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, so I joined the Army right out of high school. I was going to go pre-med in kinesiology, and then I was like, well, maybe I'll be a nurse. Well, maybe I'll do this. And I was like, I'm just going to join the Army and figure it out later. And I became a medic in the Army. I did 3.5 years and met my late husband. And he, at the time, was heading towards Special Forces. And being dual military alone is already a struggle. So unfortunately, I decided to get out and put his career ahead of mine. And then we have a son. So I have a 7-year-old. During that process, I was trying to figure out what to do outside of the military. So that was a struggle in and of itself. So I got to experience what it is like to be a military spouse and finding your identity while you know that you're only here for a short amount of time. Knowing how do I set roots for a year and a half? How do I set roots for 2 years here? And so I got to experience this is kind of rough on this side. So learning what kind of business or hobbies I could get into. I got into wedding photography and branding and website design, pretty much just to kind of get to know other military spouses and entrepreneurial spouses and things like that. And then he passed away in 2018, which I'm sure we'll discuss later on. But we were back and forth with issues with him and substance use and things like that. And so I kind of moved back and forth between Fort Bragg and Arizona, which is where I'm originally from. And I went back to school, got a marketing degree just so I could use my GI Bill to help me out. And I slowly but surely over the last couple of years, I've kind of returned to who I originally wanted to be, which was focused on nutrition and therapy and things like that. And so as of last year, I was originally in a master's in social work program, and I ended up having a lot of triggers and flashbacks come in. And so I had to drop out of the program temporarily. And during that pause of healing, I got my personal training certification and I got my health coaching certification, all of this while I'm trying to heal. It's ADD or overachiever mentality. I don't even know, but I went and got all this different education again. And I finally decided to sit down and work on my book, which is a series of flashbacks, Darkness Within, or just Darkness Within for short. And that in and of itself sent me through a whole spiral of things and healing that I didn't know that I needed still, I think, because I was it's been 3 years, I'm fine now. And then, obviously with me going through the social work program, it it triggered me to realize that I had healing that I still had left to do. And so I started to work on the book. I was like, if I want to go back to going to the social work program, which I'm in now. So I'm really excited. A new school online. So if anything with my life changes, I can move and still do the program. But my focus is just kind of like going whole health, which is kind of what I wanted to do before I joined the military. And what I kind of loved about the military of being a medic was being able to help people, because even though I was a medic, I'd be sitting in the barracks and the guys would be telling me stories that they wouldn't tell their therapist because they felt like they could trust me. And so I was already kind of being this therapy role, just not officially, with no back, like no, nothing in my backpack to really like help them, but at least they were releasing it. So in a way it's been really nice to kind of come full circle and be at this point where, even though like I'm not where I want to be at yet, I'm in the master's of social work program again, only this time I'm in a lot better headspace. And I have the book that's going to, in some ways, give me street cred when I go to be like, hey, I understand where you're at. Like, I literally wrote a book about this, like in all of my struggles. Like, I know how you feel. I know where you've been. Maybe not to the same degree, but at least some level of like recognition, and I see you. So yeah, pretty much just my focus is coming back to being a whole health coaching. And then once I get my social work degree, being able to focus on clinical therapy. And my bigger goal is doing a From Grief to Gold, like retreats, and getting to focus on like grounding and animal therapy and focusing on trauma and substance misuse. So I think that's a quick full like 10, 12 year story in the reps of where I've been.
Right. Yeah. And I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about your transition out of the military. Yes. Because that seemed like it was maybe not really what you were expecting, when you ended up getting out, because like you said, being a dual military couple is pretty stressful, has a lot of challenges along with it. What was the transition like for you when you got out? Was there a game plan for you? Did you kind of know what you're going to do, or did you just kind of just get out and like, oh, I'll figure this out?
Overall, so at the time I was going to go nursing. I was like, I'm going to go get out, become a pediatric nurse, and I'll just go get like a job. But I realized, especially for a lot of people, you're skilled and you're professional in the Army for one thing, or whatever branch of the military, but then you become a civilian and you can't do anything. You need to go back to school for another year or two to do what you were already doing for the last 3 years. So that was like a huge like spike to the ego, like blow to the ego. I was just like, okay, cool. So I'm technically able to do all of the skill sets needed for this job, but I don't have any of the legal requirements to do so. And so for a couple of months, I was just like, what am I supposed to do? Literally everything that I'm skilled at doing, I legally can't do as a civilian. And so that it was a lot of like, well, what am I now? Like, I was a medic. And like, now what do I have to, like, now what do I can't even do the bare minimum medical things legally. So that was probably one of my hardest transitions. Thankfully now a lot of schools have been realized, this has been a couple of years now. So thankfully a lot of schools are realizing how skilled people are from the military and finding these transition programs, but they did not have those. And they were few and far between, like they were mostly like Florida, or like, you know, like places where there's a lot bigger installations and military. So yeah, I think my biggest thing with the transition was like, so now I'm a military spouse, like, cool. Like, it is nothing against military spouses at all, but it's just like, you go from being the military one and now you are the spouse and now you have no say in anything. You just get to follow whatever their life is going to be doing. And right. Just kind of finding a new identity in that. And that's kind of where I started diving into freelance. Like, I had a job, I was doing somewhat pre-nursing, but again, with the whole, how do I plan my life around this 2 year span of time? Because, he took a hiatus from the special forces program so I could have our son. And so we were only going to be in this one place for 1 year. I was like, well, that's not long enough to go get my nursing degree. And then the next program was only going to be like a 2 year. I'm like, well, that's still not long enough for me to get my nursing degree. So it was like, this was my general game plan when I was getting out, but then real life came in. I was like, okay, that's not in the cards anymore. And so that's kind of where my entrepreneurial endeavors started. Like I dove into photography and dove into like wedding photography and portrait photography and website design, just kind of like did like test the waters. I was good at it. People paid me, felt good enough for the time being. And then, yeah, just kind of testing the waters really.
Yeah. And that's something that's always interested me too, because before we started recording, I mentioned that we live near Luke Air Force Base out here in Arizona. And so we know a lot of military families. Some of them live in our neighborhood, and other groups that we're involved in, we just happen to know a few of them. And every couple of years they pack up and move, and they go someplace else. And I always wondered, like, with the spouses, how do they figure out how to do any sort of job when they're constantly moving? It's not like you can go in and do a 9-to-5 job, that you physically have to be present for. And so freelancing tends to be the thing that a lot of them fall back to, things like photography or graphic or website design or some administrative type yes. work that they could do from home. As long as they have an internet connection, they can do the work. It doesn't matter really where they are. And that way, as they're moving around the country or even around the world, they're still able to do that kind of work. So that's interesting that you came across that as well, because it seems like that's kind of the way that a lot of people go. And I think these days it's a little bit easier to do stuff like that than
especially post-pandemic, where people are realizing, oh, there is a lot more that we can do at home. Like now it's starting to, we can have you work remotely. That's fine. You can move. Right. That's fine. But before exactly. it was not
yet. Yeah. Yeah. And before, when it was like, oh no, we need you to be here in the office so we can, hover over you to make sure you're doing your work. I don't know. It's like you're doing it, you're submitting it on time and everything. Like, who cares if you're, at home in your pajamas or whatever, like what difference does it make? So it's interesting. I'm glad you shared that because I think there's probably a number of military spouses out there who are probably in a similar situation where they're like, they may have a college degree or, some advanced training in whatever their field is, but maybe just don't know how to put that to use. And, this is perhaps one of the ways that they can do that. So,
my book is only on a website called Spousely, and to kind of, if I'm allowed to give them a quick little shout out,
yeah,
I chose absolutely. Them specifically because I talked with the owner, the creator, Monica, and she was like, I wanted to give spouses their identity back. Like so many of them lose it. They become a mom and like that's their only identity. They become their spouse, there's all these jokes in the military about them being their spouse, but they don't have, like so many of them don't get to have an identity. And so her whole focus with Spousely is to give military spouses and military people kind of like this, like, hey, here's an outlet, kind of, what is it? Etsy, but for military. And I think that was such a great idea and very needed. So it's really cool to just see all these military spouses and getting their creative energy out there and making money off of it. And so many different things. Like there's like woodworking, there's arts, there's portraits, there's calligraphy. And so it's really nice to see that there's this need for it. And people are starting to realize, hey, we got to support the spouses too. Like they want a life too. They just don't know where to start. So yeah, I felt really called to, I was like, even though it's Spousely and like, I'm a veteran, like I like this mission. So I'm going to support it.
And you do fit in both categories as well. So it does make sense. And it sounds like it is a good mission because there is a huge untapped market there of people who have skills and talents and want to contribute not only to their household finances, but also want to contribute their skills out there to the world, right? And yes, and make a little bit of money off of it. Yeah, be seen. Yeah. And be known, and you know, make a name for themselves, right? And you know, just because you don't have roots that are planted firmly in any one area for more than a couple of years, maybe it doesn't mean that you can't do that too. So so I'm glad that they have things like this. I think there's more stuff like this coming up, yes, realizing that there is this potential out there for all these spouses who really need that way to get their stuff out there and be seen.
Yes. Right. And I can't remember, I know, cause we were in Fayetteville at the time where I started like really developing it. And I know they had like military spouse, like entrepreneurial foundations. I can't think of what their names are, but I know that if you look for them, they're out there, just not as easily found yet.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is with more spouses getting involved with stuff like this, it'll start to pick up some steam, and there'll be more readily accessible groups and organizations that are out there helping people. So I'm glad that you've shared that as well. So, before we get into your book, I think it's important to give you the opportunity to share a little bit about your husband, and you know, who he was as a person, and can you just tell us a little bit about him, so that we can kind of have an idea who he was.
So I met him, we both met at Fort Campbell, and he was getting ready to go to Special Forces, so he made it through selection and all of the hard like preparatory things. And we ended up unexpectedly having our child, so that kind of like sped things up a little bit. But he had been like an infantry medic. He had deployed back when it was like 15 months deployment, so he had had two tours, and both in like Fort Drum and or oh my gosh, I can't, Washington. I know what it's called. I can't think of which fort it is.
Port Lewis, right?
Lewis, yeah. Lewis, yeah. And so like I've heard nothing but like great stories of him being their medic for both locations. But yeah, he was very excited, very focused on like the impact he was going to be able to make in Special Forces. And as a medic, he was constantly that perfectionist, like concerned about whether or not he was going to make it through these things, which, to be completely honest, that's totally understandable. Like the medical portion alone, so many people don't make it through just the medical portion of the Special Forces side of things. And that's the very first part that they make them go through if they're trying to become a Special Forces medic, just because they're not going to invest all this time and if they're not going to make it through this. And right. So he was just very much focused on his career path and his focus of being able to make a huge impact in people's lives. Unfortunately, we had a lot of ordeals, and I write about it in my book, and it took a lot of time for me to like work through this, but he had substance use issues, and a lot of it was, you know, there's even now, like I know they're in the military is working on being better about the mental health, behavioral health system, but there's still a lot of lacking when you're trying to further your career and you're also seeing behavioral health. And so he was never willing to go seek help care, or, you know, he was like, oh yeah, like they diagnosed me with this, but like, I don't conform to, you know, having PTSD, or I don't have it. And I'm like, okay, but like it's showing in all these other ways, but that's okay. And so while he was like still very much focused on his career, there were a lot of things that kind of like mess with our relationship. And so we spent most of our relationship on and off. Like I'd come back to Arizona and he would come there. He would be in Fort Bragg. And then we would come in, try to work on things again, and then, you know, things would kind of fall apart. But he, and anyone who's been in the military with him has nothing but great stories about how great of a medic he was and how passionate he was about everything. And I mean, it showed, like he was super knowledgeable and like always like very on top of things. He had just had a lot of demons he wasn't willing to face. And at some point they make you face them, whether you want to or not.
Right.
And so what, like before he went through the program, he had an overdose while I was pregnant. And that was kind of where I first, like, I knew something was wrong with him, but I couldn't pick out what was wrong. And then that was the eye-opening answer for me. And so that was kind of like the start of our issues. And then we kind of just brushed under the rug, and he went and worked towards special forces training and did really, really, really well. But we ended up having like another falling out because I was like, you need to take a break. Like, you need to heal yourself. Like, you continuing on special forces and not getting the healing that you need isn't going to fix the salute, like fix the problem. You're just going to have even more problems during your missions. And so we separated again. And then a couple months later, something came up. He came out to Arizona for like one of his like final like sergeant medical training things. And so we met up, and then 2 weeks later something came up and he was no longer in the, well, he didn't even tell us he was no longer in the program. Just something came up and he wasn't sure if he was going to be continuing. And then about 6 months later he died. And so there was a lot of things that I didn't know about until he died, because he just kind of kept all of his demons to himself, which a lot of veterans do, a lot of service members do. Unfortunately, it's the common talk that we have with one another is that, like, we don't, why didn't you tell us? I'm like, well, we were drowning. We didn't know how to tell you. What were we going to tell you, that you could fix it? Like, and so there was a lot that came to surface, and like I share it in my book, but it came down to he had popped hot on a test. And for those who, apparently that's not a civilian term. So for those who aren't, so for those who are civilian, it means he tested positive for drugs in a urinalysis. Cause I didn't know that was not a civilian terminology until I was telling someone.
You know, honestly, until I knew exactly what you meant, but until you said that, it didn't even occur to me that
civilian. Sure, there's non-military people who listen as well. Right. Yeah. So, long story short, 2 weeks after he had seen me and his son, he popped hot he tested positive for having drugs in his system, and he didn't tell me. He didn't tell anybody. He shared that he might go nursing instead. It was like, none of this makes sense. Like, you've written me letter after letter through SEER school, through SUT, which I don't know half the acronyms, what they mean, so I can't help you. You can Google it. SF has their special forces has a whole training list that you can look up and find out all the acronyms and the meanings of what they do in the different areas. Cause even half the military doesn't even know what the training is. But, yeah, so it was just, like 2 weeks after seeing us, I think he just spiraled. And it wasn't until after he died that I learned from other people, like, he had been getting involved in like a church group of sorts. And he wasn't even religious when we first met. There was like, and I'm not going to get like into religion or spirituality in this necessarily, but he wasn't even religious at all or spiritual when we first met. And then so for him to be involved in like a church group towards the end was like, what, like how, where, when along this journey did this happen? But after he had passed away, she had shared that he had like been like around that time frame going through a lot of depression and a lot of things. And it was kind of coming full circle of people can put up this front, like, oh, we're going kayaking, we're hiking, we're having all this great time. Like, and I'm having such a great time, but like, they come home and then they like unpack themselves and their masks come off. And I think that was like the biggest awakening for me. It was just like realizing how fake we can be on social media. Even my own like husband, regardless of how complicated we were at that time, the fact that he wasn't willing to open up about any of his struggles. And I mean, again, we were separated most of our like 4 years of marriage because of the mental health issues that weren't getting taken care of. But yeah, I think the biggest thing was, and it's the sad thing is, you know, all of his military friends, all the people he was deployed with nothing but great stories, nothing but how great of a medic he was, how great he was at taking care of people and keeping the morale up. But then at home is a completely different person, a person who's not mentally there anymore, who's given everything that they had. And then now they have the demons of, I could have done more. I could have done this. Like, what about this person that I couldn't help, and like drowning in this? And yeah, I think I didn't get to know him very long. You know, he was 31 when he passed, and I actually had like a freak out moment because his birthday just recently passed. I was like, next year I'm going to be as old as he was. I was like, this is crazy. Like, I was like, that's so young. like I knew it was young, you know, I'm only a couple of years younger, but like, I knew that was young, but to be turning his age next year, I was just like, he was gone so young. And it's so often, like, so many veterans are gone so young. And yeah, I think just, that's like a long little story about it, but yeah, just he was two people, you know, and he was both people. He was the compassionate person and the unhealed person.
And I think a lot of, like, you alluded to this, too, but I think a lot of service members and veterans carry both of those personalities. So it's almost like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of thing, where when you're at work, you're focused and you're doing your job. And now, of course, that's not everybody, but you might be a great soldier. You might be a great, a medic, or, you know, whatever it is that you do in the military. But then when you come home, it's like, okay, now I have to put that down sometime. And I have to deal with some of these other things at some point, but they're hard to deal with. It's never fun to deal with these things, right? No one wants to talk about these things, but that's how we heal. That's how we get better, is by talking about these things. So it's hard to deal with these things just by yourself. And unfortunately, a lot of times in the military, there's this, macho attitude that people end up having.
Where it's, I'm like, fine. Oh,
yeah, I'm fine. I'll just suck it up and deal with it. And, you know, whatever, I'll be fine. But then they're not fine. And, you know, they're not taking care of their own stuff. So that's just, you know, I think the military has gotten better over the years with how people deal with some of the stuff. Obviously, some improvements still need to be made, but it's better than it was maybe 20 some odd years ago, or even longer, where there was like no help whatsoever for some of this stuff, or very limited anyways. But, you know, when you try to go and deal with this stuff on your own, it doesn't necessarily get any better. You kind of need to rely on that support network, whether it's your family or your fellow soldiers or Marines or airmen or whatever branch you might happen to be in, or figure out how to get the help that you need to overcome some of the issues that you might be going through, right? So after his death, after he passed away, could you talk about the grief journey that you went through, that you experienced after his death? I know everyone handles grief in different ways, and I'm interested to kind of hear what that looked like for you.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, like, we were complicated because we were like, yes, I was technically his wife, but like, we weren't together, but we were technically together. And like, I still wanted things to work, but it was like, will this ever work? And so to go from like us being separated and our own lives, we barely even talked to each other, but yeah, we were still married, like living our completely different lives, to being like, hey, yeah, so your husband died. It's like, oh, okay. That's new. Like, we had just texted last night. Like, I had just read through old notes, and I was like, well, maybe after he finishes the course, we can like work on things, when I know he's like done moving around for a while. And then to like have that door just immediately slam closed with like an indefinite answer was kind of a mind blow for me. But I actually didn't realize until last year when I was writing my book that I never grieved about being a wife. I had spent 3 years grieving the loss of my son's father. And I guess that's a very typical thing for a parent to do, is they grieve for their children before they grieve for themselves. And so it was always, oh, my son's dad, my son's dad, my son's dad. And it wasn't until I started working on my book that my friend called me out on it. And like, she was like, you know, you don't ever say your late husband. I was like, oh, shoot. And that like sent me down this whole spiral. So for 3 years, it was kind of just like, okay, how do I take care of my child? How do I take care of my child? What can I do for him? Like, yeah, I'm a widow, like whatever, I'm a widow. Okay. But like my child, like and the fatherly influences and this and this and this. And so I had actually uprooted my life, which all the things you're not supposed to do is like make like, hey, yeah, like, so I just like moved to this place I've never really been to and like all these things. But I had moved to where his dad's family was because I thought that was going to be good for us. I was like, well, he's buried here. Like if he ever wants to visit, this will be good for him. Everything was good for my son. It was, nothing was ever, what do I need for my healing? What do I need for this? It was, how do I think, and mind you, my son at the time was almost four, one of the two, I can't remember, but yeah, I think he was almost four. And so he's super young. He didn't have that many memories with him, just because even when we were together, he wasn't there because he was in school all day or in the field for 3 months, you know, like there, he didn't have a huge impression on him. So for me to put so much of my like focus during the grieving process on how will my son feel better, it kind of took a while for me to like grieve for myself. But I think I just kept busy. I was like, okay, what do I got it. I'm going to go bring money in. Like, I'm going to go do this. You know, I did exactly what he did, which is like, and what a lot of people do, just, I was like, oh, I'm going to just go be busy doing all the things that I need to do.
Right.
And yeah, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to move to this new place and I'm going to start fresh. And it was kind of funny. Like I write it in my book and like, I joke about it now with some of the friends that I have there, cause I moved to this small town and I like lied. They're like, so like, what brings you here? I was like, oh, I found a house that I liked. And they're like in the middle of nowhere. I was like, yeah. They're like, how'd you even find this town? I was like, oh, I was just on Zillow. Like it took me like months to even like tell the people there, and I'm in a small town. They know why I moved there.
They'll figure it out, right?
Yeah.
Small town, they talk. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I was just very much avoidant. I was very avoidant of the fact that this was my life now. Like I was like, yeah, like I did the single mom thing, but now I'm like single mom. Like there is no going to visit dad. And there is no figuring things out together. Like it's just me now. And I think in some ways, because of our separation, it made it even harder to grieve because I was already used to him just disappearing and being gone. And so it was like, well, yeah, it's just like normal. Like he's just gone. And then it was like, but he's like gone now. And so I think a lot of it was like, I would like break down when I was like looking, I don't have the notes. My notes are in the other room, but like I had like the notes that he wrote me the two different times that we were separated. And then the notes that he wrote me during SEER school, which is survival training for people who don't know. They basically like treat you like you're getting imprisoned, like a prisoner of war essentially is what SEER school does to you. So I have letters from him from that. I have letters from him from the next training of him like not wanting to be a failure and things like that. And like they would like wreck me because they'd remind me like, oh, like this was a thing. Like I do care, you know, like, you know, just like letting my and this is part of like the healing process is like I just numbed and I just didn't feel anything. And because it's easier. And I think in some ways it's also a blessing because if we were to feel every emotion right then and there, we would destroy ourselves. And so I think in some ways it's like this blessing that like right now I'm just grieving for my child because that's all my mind, my body has to give. Like that's the energy that I have. And then like I did talk space here and there, just when I was going through, cause I was like, I'm just so tired. You know, I'm like, why am I so tired? Why am I so like, whatever. And, hearing them just talk about like how, like, you know, I've lived all my life defensively, like from childhood to living with this life now, just like constantly having to live defensively and how like to practice vulnerability without expectation. And so I started being like, I'd share things like anytime I saw a flag, I just fall. I would be like in tears. I couldn't look at a flag. I was like, I'm sick of the stupid American flag. I don't ever want to see it again. Like, and I don't want to see a service member, and I'm a service member. Like, right. I'm prior service. I'm like, I don't ever want to see a service member again. I don't ever want to see an American flag again. And my son was so little, like, and this is one of the things where I decided to like share. So I'd share my story periodically on social media. It was kind of like my outlet. I journal, and then the small little smidgen of vulnerability after I already like went through it, I would share on like with select people or on social media. But I remember one of like the hardest things for me was because my son was so young, he didn't know it as the American flag. He knew it as daddy's flag. And I was like, that breaks my heart that my child doesn't even know that this is like the United States of America flag. He just knows it as daddy's flag. And like, I was like, I can't even imagine how many other little kids don't even know. They know it as daddy or mommy's flag or grandma's flag or who know, you know, whatever parent's flag before they know that it's a country's flag. And like how like much that wrecked my world. So like, and it gave like this whole, you know, we as military, like we do take a lot of pride in the flag, but like for that, that was like one of the really big moments for me and like just how much meaning something can have. But yeah, I think a lot of it was just avoidance and keeping myself busy. And then over time it was like, I remember a period where I pulled out stuff and my son just comes in bawling because he wants to see photos and not really knowing like he had like stories to share. And it's like, do I tell him these are real or not real memories? Cause he was so little. I'm like, you know, he can have his memories that he thinks he has with his dad. But it honestly wasn't until last year. So 3 years in that I finally started grieving for myself of the fact that like, I did want this marriage to work and I did want these things. They felt like such a fraud when they're like the wife of so-and-so, the gold star like wife. And yeah, I would say like last year was when I really started like healing for my own self. And it was because of all of the triggers that came to attack me when I was trying to further my career. And I was like, okay, well, if I want to further my career, I have to focus on my demons now. Like it's my turn to focus on these or I'm not gonna be able to go further. So in 2021, I was not only gonna be a gestational carrier. So if people don't know that I was gonna carry another couple's child. And I was like, oh, it's fine. Like, it's not my child. Like, it'll be fine. But I kind of forgot how traumatizing my pregnancy was because at the time, that was around the time where my late husband was having a lot of his issues. So I was going to be a gestational carrier. But because during my pregnancy, I dealt with a lot of things with like, he like imagined things and like he imagined things and it was like all like drug induced or combination of I'll never know if it was a combination of like PTSD and drug induced, but I didn't realize how unhealed I was until I was getting closer to the process of being a gestational carrier. And I was like, I'm not ready to unpack all of that right now. Like I don't want to relive that again. Even though it was going to be a completely different scenario, it was the fact that like your body, the whole, like your body keeps score or your body keeps count. And like, as I got closer, I was like, why am I so panicked? Why am I struggling to stay awake? Like, why am I'm falling back into this defense mode that I was in when I first became a widow? Like what's triggering me? And I was like, I can't do it. Like, I can't be a gestational carrier. And then that was around the same time that I was also in the first round of my master's of social work program. And I had chosen, we did a lot of research articles and I chose to focus on trauma and substance use and how they relate to one another. Like why people who have dealt with trauma, regardless of like what age, are more prone to substance misuse. And that just brought me down memory lane again and again and again. And so I was just hitting myself with all of these traumatic triggers all at once, and it spiraled me. And again, that's like, I think I mentioned earlier, it's if you're either going to choose to go heal on your own, or it's going to force you to heal, or you're going to drown. And I reached the point where I was drowning, and I was like, I overcommitted. I was not healed. And now it's just all like Pandora's box just opened. And so 3 years in was when I finally was like, okay, I gotta work on this. I gotta like figure out like why this affects me, why this is hurting me, and just accepting. And so I remember a lot of my healing comes from nature. And I think there's this beauty of like, you don't have to try. And I think like EMDR, there's so many different therapies out there now that are, it's really nice, because I think a lot of veterans struggle because they're like, I don't want to talk about this stuff. But there are so many different ways that you can work on healing without having to specifically speak about it. And like, you can still feel the emotions and a lot of the emotions without having to like have this whole spiel where you share your life story with somebody necessarily, because that's not going to benefit everyone. But for me, it's always been like going on a road trip and like letting my emotions sit with me, and like having a cry session or having a jam out session in the car and just like releasing that energy. And so I went on a road trip after I dropped out of the program, after I told the gestational carrier couple that I couldn't do it anymore. I went on a road trip because that's what I do to clear my head. I go on road trips, like 15-hour road trips. And so I went out to Colorado, and that was kind of the start of my forgiveness process, which was also part of my healing. I drove through Flagstaff, which is where the last time my son and I saw his dad. And I realized, I kind of like sat in his shoes. I was like, I wouldn't have told me anything if I just ruined my career. Like after writing these letters, not even a couple months ago, that like, I don't want to have to tell you that I failed. And then to come back and have failed, like I wouldn't have wanted to share that. And then it was also like, I would be so depressed. Like I would be so depressed. Like I just saw my eventual possibly ex-wife. I just saw my child. I don't know when I'm going to get to see them again. So it was like just a lot of, and mind you, like I wasn't in this exact same spot that he was at, but to be like in that kind of mindset of like, this is the last place we saw him, like trying to get an idea of where his headspace was at, helped me in some shape or form kind of healing. Because I was so mad. And I think a lot of my unsolved healing was just because I was so mad. I was so mad. I couldn't feel any other emotions. I couldn't be sad because I was bitter. I was mad. I was like, how come you get to be the one to leave? Like you did all of this to me, and now I'm still stuck with like the leftovers, right? You know? And so, yeah, me taking that road trip and kind of getting that perspective of like, you know, everything's not black and white. Like I'm that. And I think it's the problem with a lot of people with healing is that they don't take the time to take into consideration that like we are all imperfect humans and we are all battling our own demons, whether we share it or not. And if we just take a moment to like look at it in a lens of their perspective, then maybe we can find forgiveness and we can find healing. And that was kind of the step towards my healing and the start of me writing my book as well, because I realized, oh, like, you know, it wasn't all bad. Like I knew it wasn't all bad, but like to kind of start to like piece the pieces together of like just how broken he was and all of these things along our journey to healing. Also, like, so me starting to work on the book and like kind of coming back from an empathetic lens from that road trip was the start of my healing. But I also didn't do it properly with writing my book. I didn't take time to like ground myself while I work through all this trauma. It was good for me, but it was not at all the way that I would recommend, because I've got like non-diagnosed ADD, ADHD. And so I hyper-focus on things, and I hyper-focused on 4 years of trauma all at once. and that's not the best of ideas. So I just like what hyper-focus is, you know, when you're writing a book, you're like right back in these memories, like they were yep. right then and there. And like, I knew that, but then I would still be writing it. And then you're rewriting it and you're rewording it and you're reformatting it. So you're just like marinating in one of the most traumatic periods of your life. And I was not seeing a therapist at the time. I was not going out and grounding myself. I was just sitting at a computer and then going to a job and then sitting at a computer and like sleeping here and there. And it actually brought me through like a whole dissociation state and derealization and whole other side of the healing process. Because I think a lot of people in their own shape or form or a different level of dissociation deal with it. But this was like another form of my healing journey was, I had put myself into all of these previous flashbacks that I kind of like forgot where I was at. And a huge part of me moving out to where I'm at now was to help me get out of the dissociation. Like I needed to be like, no, like this stuff was real. Like I really was here. This stuff existed. But it's definitely a process. like everybody grieves differently. Everybody heals differently. And yeah, that's just been a really big, me finally coming to terms with it and then not hyper-focusing and taking time to ground myself in nature and just be present minded. Like I didn't know how hard it was to be present minded.
Right. And it is hard, especially when you're in the middle of all of that. You know, it's hard to get yourself out of that, especially if you're not seeing a therapist who can help kind of walk you through some of that, mm-hmm. that process. Right. So I know when I wrote my book, I realized all these years later, all the things that I did wrong in my journey after my brother had passed away. And I was like, you know, there's no reason that somebody else has to go through what I went through, and make all those same mistakes. And I wanted to share all the things that I did wrong so that hopefully it helps somebody else not make those same mistakes down the line somewhere. So I want to ask, you talked about some of the things that maybe you wish you had done maybe differently and stuff too. What advice would you have for other people in your shoes, other family members who maybe lost a loved one during their military service as well? You know, in one of those unexpected kind of losses, you know, those are the ones that, you know, like when someone is going through a multiple years long battle with cancer or something, you kind of expect that something is going to happen. You have all this time to mentally prepare. And I'm not saying that it's any easier or harder one way or the other, but it does give you that time to mentally prepare. But in some of these unexpected deaths, it kind of hits you like a ton of bricks and you don't have that time to necessarily prepare. So what kind of advice would you have for other people who might be in a similar situation?
So it's actually funny that you, not funny, but so I actually had lost my grandma like 6 months before to cancer. So I had mentally prepared, we knew. So I totally were like, yes, it's sad, but it's a different type of grief because you, like you said, you've already been mentally preparing for this event to happen. And like, yes, you're emotional. Yes, like, you know that they're going to be gone, but you kind of had time to slowly ease into this.
Right.
I think the biggest difference between that and then me getting a call the next day from an apartment complex letting me know that they found his body was a lot different shock because you're in denial. And I think the biggest thing is that like it's not going to be linear. You can go in circles 10 times and that's okay because every one of those times is going to hit different. So like, you know, like for me, like even with the flag, for the flag example, for a long time, I couldn't even look at the flag because it was so triggering. And that it's okay to some degree to like allow yourself to kind of almost block out certain things because we can only handle so much as a person with our emotions. But but definitely seeking care from somebody who isn't your friends or your family who is professional. So yeah, I know that like therapy isn't always as readily available, first off monetarily for a lot of people, but also just in time. Like there are only so many therapists and there are so many people. And sometimes, like, especially like when I was writing my book, a huge issue was that the therapists that I wanted weren't going to be available until after I was probably done with my book. And so I had to figure out ways to do it on my own. And so I would heavily, if you can't go see a therapist in person, there are so many amazing therapists on YouTube who will share with you different techniques for grounding and working through emotions. The hardest thing or the worst thing you can do is just bottle it up and assume that you'll get to it later, because that's when you explode. And for me, it showed up in like my anger. It showed up in me not being the greatest mom. And I did have a lot of my own regrets from me not healing. Like I drank too much. I didn't care about so many things. And I definitely don't want to see people falling into that. And so a lot of that is just like journaling. A lot of, I've seen a couple of like veteran organizations who are focused on helping people with journaling or writing out your feelings in like a fictional way. So in a way you're releasing those emotions, but you're not attached to it. And so I would say my biggest piece of advice would be just seeking help. I think even with me going through like the dissociation that I had last year, it wasn't until I finally Googled it that I was like, oh, I'm not crazy. My body is just protecting me, because I just went through a whole storm of bad things all at once. And so definitely, you know, sometimes Google will tell you that you're dying and you have cancer and all these things, but sometimes it's really important for you to look it up. And again, like YouTube, there's a lot of like psychology websites that can share tools if you can't do it with an actual therapist, just finding tools that you can use, whether that's going out and grounding, going and doing meditation. Like I used to think breathwork was so stupid. And now I'm like, that is so beneficial for my anxiety. Like I needed this and depression. Like we need breath. Like we don't breathe like we should. And it's amazing that it's an essential thing. And we don't take deep breaths like we need to fuel our whole system. And so
it's something that we do every second of every day for all our entire lives. And we suck at it. We don't do it very well.
I was just like blown away. I was like, oh, is this what like a full breath is supposed to feel like? I had no idea. This is really relaxing. And so, yeah, I would say if you're able to see a therapist or a psychiatrist, because if you need medications, you need medications. Like I'm all for ayahuasca, medicinal, you know, whatever treatment will work for you. Grounding, talk therapy, EMDR. There are so many different, and I think that's actually the beauty, to kind of go back to like the military side, is the beauty of psychology is like, as we learn more about the brain, we learn about how much it's able to heal itself. And before, we thought people who had a disorder, if you have depression, if you have anxiety, if you have postpartum depression, if you have post-traumatic stress disorder, like we used to think that like, oh, well that sucks. Like you're with it forever. But now we're realizing like, no, you can change. Like, yes, that was traumatic. And yes, that was an event, but you can heal. Just like a broken bone can heal, your brain can heal as well. And I think giving yourself grace through the process. And once again, like you can think you're okay. You can think you like healed from this trigger, and 5 years later, I might cry from a flog again. And that's okay, because some memory came back that I needed to release. And again, just giving yourself grace and finding what works for you. Some people, there's hikes. A lot of people who like to hike. A lot of people who like to write fictional stories. A lot of people like to write with music. And so it's like finding what works and helps ground you and allow you to feel those emotions in a healthy manner and not bottle them up with drugs or alcohol or just complete numbing would be my piece of advice.
And I think that's great advice. And that's something that I wish, you know, all those years ago that I had heard from somebody else, because, you know, I did all of those things, you know, just numbing and not getting the help that I needed and not dealing with the anger and the, it just was not the best way of dealing with things. So I'm glad you were able to share that. Sometimes it's good to hear from somebody else, that just some of the ways that you can deal with some of these things. And I think, you know, what you shared was some ways that people might just not think about, like you were saying, go on YouTube or some other websites that might have some, you know, advice for the grounding techniques and things like that, that you might need. And you just might not think about even doing those things. You might, I can't afford going to a therapist, so I'm just going to deal with it on my own. Well, there are other options out there. And especially for, you know, military families dealing with military losses, there are organizations out there, the Vet Center, there's other organizations that will actually work with the families as well. So, you know, there are options out there. Might take a little research to figure out what they are, but there definitely are some options out there. So I appreciate you sharing that. Before we wrap this up, I want to give you a chance to just remind people where they can go to get in touch with you and to get a copy of your book.
Yes. So I have a main website called melissaann.org. As I work towards getting my LCSW, I wanted everything to be consolidated. So I have references for mental health, nutrition, exercise, just holistic health, whole health focused. And you can also find that on at melissaann.org for social media. My book is located on Spousely, but if you also go to melissaann.org, you'll see the link for the book there. And then I have at From Grief to Gold and at From Grief to Gold podcast, which is primarily focused on solely mental health and trauma, and where I promote most of my book on there.
Awesome. Yeah. And I will have links to all of those websites and social media links and all that stuff in the show notes. So anyone who wants to get in touch with you, follow you or listen to the podcast or anything, take a look at the show notes. All those links will be available for you there. Melissa, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I appreciate your willingness to share such a dark time in your life with the hope of healing others, right? I mean, I know your message will reach the right people at the right time. So thank you for coming on and sharing that message with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.